Good morning, everyone. We chose this venue not because we knew we'd have 100 people or thought we would, but because the equipment was working. Yesterday, as you know, we had equipment which did not work, and that didn't prove very constructive. But just to get started, because I've had to try and persuade some members who are not members of this committee to join us, just to open up. And in particular, in this instance, we have somebody from Transport, I think it is, the Portfolio Committee of Transport. I may not pronounce your family name correctly, but is it Bergo?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us. We have quite a few apologies, but let me first open up and thank members for being here on time. Although we allocated, I think, till 1 o'clock or 12:30, we expect to be completed by 11:30, 12:30. All right? Pardon? Yes, so do I. How interesting. But, no, on a more serious note, I'm sure we'll be pleased. So I really would like to thank you, Honourable Bergel, and indicate that you may leave as you wish to go to your other committee. Thank you once again on behalf of the committee. And then to look at the agenda. Do members have copies of the agenda? Now, just in terms of administration, we've gone backwards. Agendas used to be handed out the day before. Let's try and do that. Can we please propose the adoption of the agenda on the position of moving tea to possibly 10:30 and considering to finish at about 11:30, 12:30. All right? So can we have someone to propose adoption? Oh, Honourable Williams, seconded by the Honourable Tierko. Right. Apologies. Medical seems to be the biggest list, and we go into the reasons again. You all are aware of them. Honourable Buyani, Honourable Mantash, and a exam study leave, Honourable Van Skalkwyk and Honourable Klingwini. Those two. I have a late apology for political reasons from the Honourable Alberts. I have an apology from Honourable Esterhazen, a strange apology that indicates he may be here, but may have to leave for compassionate reasons. You know, his wife is not at all well. So he may join us, he may not. Those are the apologies. Honourable Mr. Macpherson?
I'm sure Mr. Hermans has it. The Honourable Kachalia did have a late political deployment that he had to attend to.
Right, yes, Mr. Hermans says he has received it. So we will immediately go on to deliberations on the committee bill on debt relief. Yesterday I cautioned everyone and said, no, this is just handing out the document and literally making sure we go through it, but not in detail. So today, as discussed with yourself, Advocate van der Merwe, if we can do this now in greater detail to allow for deliberation. And I'm going to stop you at a point to allow for deliberation, which may be, it won't be when you've finished. Where would you suggest we stop?
The first couple of slides deal with legal principles, and I don't know if members perhaps have more questions around debt as property, deprivation versus expropriation, what a law of general application would be, the principles surrounding a law of general application, so that's kind of the first part. Perhaps we could finish off if there are any questions on the legal side, and then move to the current framework bill that is there, which if members want me to have some document presented after recess, then these are the kind of things that I need to confirm that I can proceed on this basis. Not to say that this will necessarily be what the bill looks like in the end, but as a starter product to some extent. So perhaps we can start with legal questions and then move to the framework.
Members, you did get the presentation yesterday briefly, and you never had the opportunity for actual deliberation. So we're looking at page 2, the legal questions to be answered. As it was put to us by the Advocate van der Merwe, is debt property for the purposes of Section 25 of the Constitution? I'm sure we've all got that, and I see a hand up already. Let's look at that first. And I saw two hands up. Go ahead, Honourable MacPherson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Advocate. I think I want to agree with your suggestion yesterday that I think it would be difficult for senior counsel, and I've thought about it since yesterday, for senior counsel to give us an opinion until such time as a formal position is taken in what a bill looks like. But I just think it's important that there is that commitment from your office that such an opinion will be sought, and I don't ask that to question your bona fides, but I was quite concerned how the Copyright Amendment Bill was signed off by the State Law Advisor when there were clear constitutional problems with it, and so I just don't want us to get into a position down the line where it goes through some sort of mediocre process and we actually don't have that senior counsel opinion. So can you give us that guarantee that it will be sought
just
once?
Just a minute, I must just stop you there on process. It is not the prerogative of the advocate. This committee here will discuss that. And we will then instruct. Do you follow? So it's the other way around.
Well, I would actually disagree with you. I think that Advocate van der Merwe can solicit that senior counsel should we not even ask for it. I mean, she would need to satisfy that in her mind, and that's my question to her, is will she do that once something is more formal?
That decision will be made by this committee, not Advocate van der Merwe. Let me be clear about that. Right, Honourable Williams, you had your hand up. Honourable.
Sorry, Chair. I asked I'm not sure that you can pronounce on that.
I can, actually, and I'll make this clear, I can. If you have a problem with that ruling,
on what ruling
take
are
it
you,
up.
On what rule are you making that ruling?
I am telling you, as chairperson of the committee, that remains a committee decision. All right? Thank you.
And
you're a member of the committee, so you can put that position forward, which we've heard. Right. Honourable Williams, Honourable Tiako.
Thank you, Chair. I've just got a question about deprivation as opposed to expropriation. I just want to know, if we go down the deprivation route, will that mean that we can expropriate, I'm going to use that as the only word, debt, if we use deprivation as our argument for this process? So that's what I want to know, how clear. I want to know whether or not, if we use the deprivation angle, basically, and it gets challenged in constitutional court, will it be able to handle that challenge? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable Tiako.
Thanks, Chair. Advocate, you have questions. We have questions to be answered here. So I'm happy about the process so far. to say now we need to be cleared whether we are constitutional or we, so that there's no confusion when that bill is out. So we need to get clarity on this NINA, NINA process on will it be covered on this, and it will be constitutional, who's covered and who's not covered here on this process of the debt relief, and what measures are we going to put as a committee. And understanding this is a committee bill, and we need to take a decision and not to delay it furthermore, like the process should be fast forwarded, as like when we come back we need to have the document ready and everything in place so that we know what we that we're dealing with.
Thank you very much. Would you respond to those questions, Advocate?
Thank you, Mrs. Fox. If you would allow me, I would actually like to respond to Mr. McPherson. The reason why I recommended that the committee request senior counsel opinion is that that means that the members of the committee will be able to see that opinion. If I request senior counsel opinion, it is to inform my actions. But what I can say is that we have specifically, when the National Assembly rules were reviewed in the last year, we specifically requested that a requirement be included because there is more of an appetite in this fifth parliament for committee bills and private members' bills. Yet there was no process for them to be certified as constitutional, as complying with drafting style, et cetera, et cetera. We requested the task team that be included, and that was in fact included in the National Assembly rules. So for this committee bill, before it can be introduced, the chief parliamentary legal advisor has to certify that the bill is constitutional. So that means that from our office, quite likely it will be delegated to me to do that work, or I will be instructed to do that certification. And as an officer of the High Court, first and foremost, I will only be able to certify if I am satisfied that it is constitutional. So that is the guarantee that I can give you. And if necessary, if I am uncertain and there isn't another opinion to back me up that I feel comfortable with, then my office will do the necessary to make sure that we are comfortable that we, in fact, are still, as officers of the High Court of South Africa, complying with the Constitution. The next question on deprivation and expropriation. Okay. Deprivation, as the courts explained it, especially in the Agri-SA case, the court explained that deprivation is the umbrella name for interfering with the rights of someone's property. And actually, I found another case, or rather I made a copy of another case yesterday because I thought that might be very relevant as well, just to say what deprivation includes. And I just quickly want to see if I can find that in my notes. I want to read it to you because I think that will definitely help. Here it is. It is the case of First National Bank. And in fact, Andre now has my notes as well, and he said he will make them available to members. So all these cases will be made available to you. In the case of First National Bank versus the Commissioner's SARS, the court says deprivation. In a certain sense, any interference with the use, enjoyment, or exploitation of private property involves some deprivation in respect of the person having title or right to do to or in the property concerned. So in other words, any effect will be considered deprivation. Then you get types of deprivation. So the one type of deprivation is where the state benefits. And that type of deprivation is called expropriation. And for the state, when the state benefits, when it deprives someone of property, there are certain requirements. I'm of the view that a debt relief measure will not give any benefit to the state in the sense of ownership, and that is what the Agri-SA case required. So that for me means that we don't fall into that category of deprivation. It still means that it is deprivation because we are interfering with this right. But like I said yesterday, the youth enjoyment, like this First National Bank case says, youth enjoyment, that's broad. That does mean that things like sequestration is deprivation. It does mean that debt review is deprivation. But why are those constitutional? Why have they not been, I think, even thought of, people thought of challenging that? Because they are laws of general application. And that is the thing that we will have to make sure the committee bill is. The committee bill will have to be a law of general application with no arbitrary actions possible or made possible through the content of that bill. So, yes, we will be able to, if the decision is that a debt must be extinguished, that constitutes deprivation, and provided it is done through a law of general application, that is in fact the only requirement. There's another case that actually took it quite further, and it's one of those things that the purists amongst the constitutional lawyers feel a little bit irked by it. But what happened was in the First National Bank case, or the one that I just quoted, the First National Bank case, the court there actually said that Section 25, you don't look at the limitations that Section 36 of the Constitution gives. Section 36 of the Constitution gives a list of things that have to be done, that you need to comply with, justice and fairness, and et cetera, et cetera. And the court in FNB said, with Section 25 property, you just look at what the Constitution says, and it says a law of general application, and it may not be arbitrary. And that is the only test that applies. So does it apply to everyone? Does it treat people in similar situations the same? Is it precise? Is it clear? And is it giving a discernible standard that dictates to officials how to act? And if it complies with that, then I'm not the constitutional court, but in my view, that will make it constitutional. That will make it complying with the Constitution. I think to some extent I've already answered Honourable Tierko's question as well in respect of what to look at things for to be constitutional. But when we look at all of those requirements in order to make sure that this bill is constitutional, from the things that I have looked at, looking at the fresh start in Croatia, the India example, the one that example that I felt is clear would comply would be the no income, no assets process, as is done in New Zealand, Wales, and the UK. It does not mean that we have to go to the extent of those programs in those countries, because those countries, it's a misnomer to say NINA, because it's not no income. There is a certain level of income, there's a minimum income, minimum assets that is allowed. We don't have to do those requirements. The point, however, is that the process that is in place ensures that the relief measure is transparent, it is open, and because of all those things, it brings in an element of fairness, and it allows that you can, it allows the state to say that this decision to deprive of property is not arbitrary. There's a clear process in place. This is the reason why it's being done. There's no, there can be no criticism against it. And in fact, the Act from New Zealand is quite extensive, and I don't think that is what we would like to do, because that is a big, big, big process. In the framework, I've actually proposed, but that will, of course, be for the committee to agree with in the end, I've actually proposed that we empower the minister through regulations to set up that more intricate process, where it could maybe go to more people, where you might be able to broaden the category and you bring in certain criteria. Of course, we have to be careful about what we allow the minister to do, so yes, there are going to be a lot of safeguards. But it could be that the full NINA process could maybe perhaps rather be done through a regulation building on this debt relief that we will do now. So I know that there's also been a view that there needs to be perhaps when you look at all your limitations, the category, in other words, will we look at income, will we look at assets, you know, all of those things, and also the amount of the debt that's owing, when the debt was incurred, all of those things can be considered and put into one basket to become the criteria. So if I do a draft bill for the committee, I'll see what I can find, and I'll put in as much criteria as possible, and then we can take out and change and add and so on. With respect to the measures, I also explained yesterday, currently the draft bill provides for the entity that makes the decision, whether it's a tribunal or a different entity, to maybe have more than one option, because they will be considering case by case. It's not just a blanket decision, oh, you qualify, and therefore, you know, we write off your debt, we extinguish the debt. To allow an element of fairness, and the one example that I can think of is where a person really has been going through very, very dire straits, and it is really problematic, but this person has a possible job offer in the next 2 months, and very excited about it, but really would like to start the slate clean and not have to use all that income immediately on debt, and rather perhaps make sure that the house is secure and kids can go back to school, you know, things like that. Then the decision maker can say, I can see that you want to become a responsible citizen. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to suspend your debt, put a moratorium on it. No one can charge interest, no one can claim installments for 12 months. And let's see how it goes in the next 12 months. Let's see how this job of yours goes. If you maintain the job and after 12 months you can actually repay, then we progress you to debt review state. And, you know, so that could be a possibility. And if we allow, it doesn't have to be like that. We could say, no, if you look at this category that we are deciding in the end, it's clear that the only possible decision is extinction of debt. Then that is what we go with. But like I say, currently I am trying to give as many options for the committee to consider and play around with. And then in the end we can see what fits and what doesn't fit.
Right, okay. Now, that really just addresses the first couple of points here, though. Members looking at the rest, let's proceed on that basis. Yes, Honourable Williams, Honourable, is there anyone else? No, fine.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for explaining the difference between expropriation and deprivation. Under our bill, a type of deprivation, we're not going to define it then. We're going to be a new type of deprivation. Is that what I'm assuming that's what's happening. But I'd like to propose that we request the parliamentary legal advisor to come up with this draft legislation by the next quarter, but also to include in that points that highlight where the law of general application and may not be arbitrary will apply. Because we need to be specifically told that if we make this clause too broad, then it's going to go outside of the law of general application and then could be challenged in the Constitutional Court. So I need that to be quite, I would like that to be quite well defined for us. So it could be clause 1.1 or whatever the number is. But then in brackets you should say, this clause you need to be very specific, you know, and so on and so. So we know what we're dealing with, because we don't want to go all through this whole process and then because we haven't clearly defined what we're doing, end up back in Constitutional Court. So I want, if possible, on that draft that we have this highlighted to us so we know how we're going to move forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable McPherson.
excuse me. Chair, I need your guidance because, I mean, the Honourable Williams is making proposals And I need to know when are we going to discuss how we move forward, because I want to put some proposals on the table, and I want to have a discussion about you know what next and my thoughts and views. So I just need when you want to have that discussion. Do you want me to include that now that Honourable Williams has started that discussion, or do you want to do it later?
You know, in terms of the specific, if you like, decision, this is what we want, and in a direct instruction, as it were, we'd like to do that a bit later. At this point, where pertinent you may come in with certain points, as you've heard the Honourable Williams do, and I want us to have an element of flexibility here, because yesterday you did not have the opportunity to deliberate, let's be frank. And today, there are many things here that I found almost foreign to my understanding. I had a look back at the Constitution, you see, and you may be in a similar position. So let's focus on clarification, deliberation, but also have an element of flexibility. Would that be all right with you?
Yeah, because then I'd like to talk about the framework, if that's possible. So I think we can all agree that we've spent an extraordinary amount of time discussing this and looking at the various permutations and possibilities. And in my mind, I'm not sure that we're clear in who are we talking to and what are we wanting to do. And the reason why we don't know that is because we haven't seen the research. We haven't seen what we've asked National Treasury to provide us. But I still think that we can move in a direction without that, if we can establish what the core principles are that we want to see in this bill. What is it that we're wanting to do, and who is it that we're wanting to speak to? And I think that we need to make a few very clear distinctions. And I've said it previously, and I'll say it again. We use the words debt relief, debt forgiveness, extinguishing of debt interchangeably, and I'm not sure that they can be used interchangeably, because all three mean three very different things. And I think that we also need to quite frankly take this back to my party, Chair. I need to have a discussion with my party about this, and I need to give this committee, in fairness, the opportunity to see what those proposals are on what a bill might be. But I can't do that unless we understand what the principles are, unless I understand who am I speaking to. You know, are we dealing with, as the Honourable Williams has said, and as I would agree, the poorest of the poor? Are we looking to do blanket debt relief? How do we deal with the people that have debt with illegal providers? They don't have receipts for that debt. How do they benefit from that? And so I would really like to make that proposal, Chair, to you, to allow me, and also maybe allow the ANC and the IFP, to put some thoughts in writing, put it to this committee, and give my colleagues an opportunity to see how we view this thing. And then maybe, hopefully, by the next quarter when we come back, National Treasury will have that research, and they will have those numbers, and we will know who we are speaking to. And then I think that once we've got those two things, we've got a clearly identified group of people that we're speaking to, we've got the principles that we've agreed to, and hopefully we can do that by consensus between the different political parties, we then have a very nice foundation to say to Advocate Van Nimmerva, based on these principles, based on this focus group of people, please can you now bring us something to, in her words, to start picking apart. So that would be my thoughts on developing and building a framework for us to go forward.
Thank you very much, Honourable MacPherson. I do like, all your points are valid, but in particular, the one issue, and I do recognise you, Honourable Tiako, is, you know, what we understand as lawmakers and what will others understand with extinguishment, with write-off, with this and that. In other words, to me it seemed almost a definitional challenge that we're facing. What does it cover? What does it mean? And yes, it is important that we understand that, and I think at this point that information may be available. But let me allow the round to complete itself. Honourable Tiako.
I need to support what Honourable Williams said in the beginning, to say we must come up with something so that we work on a document to say this is how the draft, we need a draft, we're going on recess now. Advocate Van der Merwe can prepare so that we see, are we within, and all those things will be included on that draft, and then we'll be able to know these are the groups we are going to, and then we'll take it from there and address that problem that MacPherson is saying. But we cannot just start and go backward, and then we have identified, we've been engaging on this matter. Now we need something, that a document that will work on it, and then input and make changes based on what we are seeing, not what we are thinking.
I hear you. Effectively, you're referring, as I understand it, to some sort of framework. Okay. I do want to hand over to them, but do proceed, Honourable MacPherson.
So, thanks, Chair. I mean, I do hope that we'll be able to have, you know, some dialogue, because I think it's important, and I understand my colleagues' desire and want to have a draft for something to look at. But the problem is without knowing what the research says and who we're speaking to, it's like going for surgery and asking the doctor to try and find out what's wrong with you once he's opened you up. You need a diagnosis before you go for the surgery. You can't just say, well, you know, put me under and, you know, hopefully you'll find something. Because, I mean, he may not find something, he may end up killing you trying to find something, you know, to find what's wrong. And so I think it would be problematic for an unfair to advocate Van der Merwe to develop a framework or to develop this document, and then the research may speak to something completely different, and she may need to start again, and we need to start again. And that's why I think it's important that we understand what are our principles, what is our definition, and who are we talking to? Because, and I just want to just sound a word of caution, that once that document is on the table, it's going to be very, very difficult to start changing it. Once it's going to be, because we're going to get stuck into what the fundamentals of that draft is. And it's going to be very difficult to start adding principles after the fact of something being written. And, I mean, we as a committee agreed that we wanted to know who these people are. We agreed to that document, those terms of reference, unanimously. And we wanted to know who those people were. And I think that we must allow that process to unfold, and we must be fair to that process. Because I want us to do this thing properly. I don't want us to go down a road and then when we get what we've asked for, we have to then completely change direction because we couldn't, wait for that to come forward. And I really appeal to my colleagues that I want to put a document on the table that says, this is what I think we should be looking at. This is what I think the principles should be. And I want them to do the same thing as well. And I want us to try and find consensus on that, but I can only do that once I know who I'm talking to.
Just, yes, all right. No, well, this, I like this. We're really trying to get somewhere. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I would like to remind the Honourable Macpherson that, in fact, the subcommittee met on numerous occasions. I know you weren't in the subcommittee at the time, but the DA were represented. And in those occasions, we did discuss who, when, and where we would give debt relief or debt forgiveness measures. And we came up we had an understanding that it would be like the poor, people on minimum wage, NINA. And I think that fundamentally what Honourable Macpherson is doing is stalling tactics, because fundamentally there is massive resistance against this bill, this bill, from all over the show, in particular the people who lend money. And I think that we should move along swiftly, and we should get this draft from the legal section. And then from that draft, it won't be difficult to change it. It's not coming from the executive. It's coming from basically, a consultant that works for Parliament. Is going to give us the outline of... It's not coming from the executive, is what I'm saying, Chairperson. And we can change it in this committee. Nothing is stopping us from changing actually any bill in this committee. And so I think that we should move swiftly ahead with this. I don't think we should waste time on looking for more information. Our country is in serious debt crisis, and this Parliament needs to move to assist the people. Thank you, Chair.
Allow me to try and guide us all. Let me put it this way. As Chair, I don't think there's anyone attempting to stall, per se. I think that there are genuine concerns, as I understand it being Chair, there are genuine concerns. However, what I wish to propose, and that is, you know, utilising my track record of experience in these bills, including private members' bills, is that we must first establish principles, which is what we did when we took this to Parliament to request. When we requested to do the bill, we made it clear we're not looking at these comprehensive powers, etc. We'd like to, but we won't. We would like to ring fence a particular area that would cover X and Y. And I'm sure you were a member of the committee, Honourable Macpherson, when we were up in Good Hope Chambers. You may recall it was the time with, you know, a lot of retrenchments on the mines, and later, even before the Marikana issue had come up and so on, the National Credit Regulator was pointing to work that had been done on these mines to show that the largest numbers of lending agencies and companies not operating legally when it came to removing funds from someone's account were on these mines. So it's a long-standing challenge we've had. But we couldn't address everything. That was the one decision we took. We said, what can we address? And certain principles were noted, which went to Parliament. And issues, not NINA per se, were the most vulnerable, the poorest. Perhaps those like farm workers, domestic workers. And remember, we didn't have a minimum wage at that particular point. So my appeal, and I mean all members of the committee, why don't we go back to those principles which we sent to the subcommittee? We sent the principles there, and we asked you to work it out. But having said that, I do think the Honourable Macpherson has a point, and I'm looking at the advocate now. When it comes to what do we mean here by extinguishment of debt, we had problems with the phrase write-off, because many of us thought, oh, that was a complete write-off. We learned it didn't mean that. So I do think the issue around an understanding of what these definitions means is valuable for us to have in the framework. But I also want to say, Honourable Macpherson, that when we've got a framework, and by the way, party is important. The ANC have said this to me itself. We need to discuss this, cross sectors, etc. So the constituency period, when all parties are looking at their policies, one hopes as they deliver, gives you that opportunity to study, to reflect, and to come back. You'll have something. You won't have a framework, no, but you'll have from this meeting, I'm hoping, what we may have agreed on. But let us take a worst possible scenario, if I may. You then have this framework. And you look at the framework and you say, well, that was not what we wanted, you know. That's not what the DA wanted. We wanted this. In that framework, you're able to deal with it. So I believe it'll be constructive to have a working framework to go from. But I do want the Honourable Advocate van der Merwe to respond to what has been a long session on this side. Then I will take you next. Now go. Yes.
Look, I do hope that the Honourable Williams will, you know, sort of pull back from this thought that there's an attempt on my behalf to stall and to stop this process going forward. I mean, because by stating that, and I hear the Honourable Tierko saying you are, it is good. Because if we're going to come here with those sorts of views, I mean, what we must actually just say is, the ANC must just say, we want to do it our way, and we actually don't want to listen. We don't want to hear from you, and we don't want to engage with you. If that's the process, let's rather just say that now, and we can just get on with it. But if we want to actually have, you know, a consensus and political buy-in.
One moment. I do want to hear what you say. Just a minute.
If we want to have, you know, political buy-in and cross-political party support in this, I mean, we need to do this thing together. And my views are not born out of trying to stall this thing, but to make this piece of legislation a good legislation, to make sure that it speaks to the people that we want to speak to, that it deals with people who have debt that has been lent recklessly, that has been lent illegally, and they can't afford to pay for it, because we're not talking about that actually. You know, I certainly will and want to present a document to this committee to consider about what the framework of this of this document, working document, to use your words, is, and I'm sitting in a work around that in the recess, and I'll come back to this committee and table it, because I want my colleagues to look at it and to think about it and to engage me on it. And I want to engage them as well on what their views are. So we can come with something that is, to use the terminology, bulletproof, and that actually does the job that it's required. Because if we're going to have this sort of, this idea of interests or people trying to stop this, and we just want something here and now, It's not going to work out in the way that it really should. So I really do hope, and my encouragement to my colleagues to the right of me is that they pull back from this position that, you know, I'm here to stop something and to try and stall it, because I'm actually here to contribute to it and to find the same outcome that they're looking for. I just want to do it in a really comprehensive, empirical way.
Thank you very much, Honourable MacPherson. Honourable Tierko.
Chair, as you're saying, Honourable MacPherson, I have a feeling he just wants to drag us, slowing the process. However, he's saying he wants to submit something.
Yes.
So that we can engage on. We know that, and we can say to him, he can submit that thing to Advocate van der Merwe, so that if the same thing that is submitted is proposing, the same thing that is going to be written for us, then Advocate will be able to say, to have documents to compare on, then we'll bring the documents to us, then we deal with it.
Thank you, Honourable Chiako. Yes, you see, and this is what I say to all parties, I've said it to the ANC as well, whenever there's a change in someone's responsibility within the ANC, this committee has seen so many different members of the ANC come in and out. I think it's only the Honourable Williams that is here from 7-8 months ago, as it were. And the same appears to happen in other parties as well, where your colleague, the Honourable Hill Lewis, was right on board. However, it would appear, and I'm using the word, that phrase deliberately, he did not communicate what all that had happened in the subcommittee. Because you yourself had to accept that, yes, we had gone through the banks, but your colleagues had never informed you and left you in the dark. So we have that problem, understand from the from Honourable Williams, that is one of the challenges the ANC experiences itself. But the committee as a whole needs to say, we've gone this far. This is what we gave the subcommittee. And this is what we came out with. When we came out of that subcommittee, it was to do three or four things. The one issue was to clarify the issue around justice, is it, and correctional services, you know, that particular constitutional development. The other one was around the financial issues, national treasury per se, which we did, incidentally, under the insurance issue as well. So there were a number of issues that we thought that was raised in the subcommittee, but what was not raised was the principle of the category or the grouping of people that we needed to address. And as a matter of fact, the study group, the study visit, was on the basis of that decision, and the application being prepared is on that basis. So it didn't come out of thin air. The challenge that the subcommittee, I understand from looking at its reports, etc., is there something else that we should be doing? Look at the debt counselling. There are serious challenges here because of the costs involved. They say that they're not being effectively remunerated per se or able to gain such fees from someone unless who's earning under 7,500. So the subcommittee identified that gap, 3,000, is it, Advocate Van der Merwe, to 7,500 or something?
2,500 to 7,500.
Oh, 2,500. Now, when you look at that was invaluable for us because we never knew, or rather we haven't focused on that. Arising from that, I understand,
was the point that I'm not sure who made it in the subcommittee, but when it came to us, it was, look, there's also a category or a group of people, some of them are policemen, some of them are teachers, people like that, who perhaps should also be included. And that went to a much higher level. You began to look at over 20,000 or something. That was not the intention of the committee when it sent this work to the subcommittee. So what I'd like to appeal for is three things from all parties now. I take your point, Honourable Macpherson, you've been in the committee much longer than some members, that you really do want to be constructive here and that you would like us all to find each other. I take that as the baseline, all right? But that we don't all agree with the same baseline. Now, what can happen, and I'm just looking here at some issues that have arisen that Mr. Herman's pointed out, if Advocate Van der Merwe is asked to proceed in a particular manner, other parties must contribute to that and hand her their respective ideas. And what happened in the past, and I know you were with us on that bill, it would be in a different colour. For example, the D would be in blue. I don't know, the ANC would be in green, EFF in red, etc. So that we would know this came from X, you see. And we would then all look at it, come back with the framework and say, this point is valuable, but we need to change it or amend it in a particular way. I think that would help you as a party to have a direct input, the ANC, and I understand the Freedom Front want to also make a similar input. So what I'd like us to do today, if possible, is to try to say, right, ask the chair of the subcommittee the principles that you expanded on. We gave you certain principles which you started off in this committee meeting with. Now, why and how are you moving higher? What other group do you think should be factored in? And I think that's what we want. The point, Honourable MacPherson, that I think needs to come immediately to the advocate is we must get a clearer definition of what we mean by these extinguishment of debt. Does it apply here? Can it be done or not, you see? And an opinion legally as to why you think it can't be done. So if we can try and agree at least on those few things, then I would like to take us to the next level here. But I truly, and I'm appealing to all committee members, I do know what two others have said, and they said, right, we do think it's a good idea to have something in writing in front of us, some sort of framework. Not the draft bill. Not the draft bill. That I must say clear. But a framework of a nature. So I'm going to take you, as I said, Honourable MacPherson, but I also want to acknowledge people who I see sitting here that I never did acknowledge, and that is the Ms. Matsugari, the commissioner here, of the chief executive officer, rather, of the, I'm looking for my documents, you see, and I don't see them any longer in front of me. That's why my delay is continuing. Minerva, the Department of Trade and Industry, the Director of Policy and Legislation in the CCRD, Mr. Kumkani, the National Credit Regulator, Ms. Matsugari, and the Company Secretary, Mr. Mashapa. I don't know, and of course, Ms. Naidu. Having said that, I want us to hear carefully what the Honourable MacPherson is saying, because he has made a valid point about those words. I was having challenges myself in that direction. You know, the definitions thereof. Honourable MacPherson.
Thank you, Chair. And most certainly I'm happy to contribute to that framework, and I will certainly do so. I just need then Advocate Fanamerva to assist me with who are we speaking to? Because I'd be interested to know if you know, because I don't know, because I don't know what that research says. And I'm going to keep drawing us to that point, because, I mean, we wouldn't have asked for that if we weren't trying to answer a question. We asked for the research because we needed a question answered. Because is the framework going to look at people who have been lent money illegally? People on mines and that sort of thing like that. You know, how does a framework deal with people that can't prove a debt? How will that framework speak to, you know, concurrent changes in other pieces of legislation? Specifically referred to the NCA, because, I mean, there's going to be legislative amendments that will have to come. I'm not sure, and I'd be interested to get your view. Can we go down this road without amendments to the NCA? Because I really like your idea or your thoughts around an application process, because I think this, you know, there is going to have to be a filter, if you like. You know, if the NCA is going, or if the NCR is going to adjudicate that, and the NCT is going to be the final arbiter on it, I mean, that requires legislative amendments as far as that I would think. So I'd just like to get your views on it, because it would then assist me in developing my my document towards the framework.
Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Just to point out, you know, Honourable Alberts, we noted that you would be late, but where are we? We only started on this section at 9:30, so you haven't lost too much. And the whole thing is, we got the presentation yesterday. We are busy going into detail, greater detail here, but also trying to look at, take into account the study that had been requested by the subcommittee, etc., on the one hand, and the challenge, can we go forward, this is what the Honourable MacPherson, I think, is posing, without having the completion of that. I think that's one of the points he has made. The other point is that the ANC has said, look, we need a framework that will assist us. If we get a legal framework on the issues that have come up, the principles that were put to the subcommittee, we could get this after, the constituency period, and take it to our parties. We're not going to get it here today. But we could get that and then add to it. The Honourable MacPherson has made it, I think, pretty clear that he believes that would be going back to front, that we should not do that, because what if we have this framework, it's all unconstitutional, and look at the time wasted instead of waiting. So it's been around that point of, what group are we trying to address? My advice to members is, let's settle on the principles. What are the principles that we sent to the subcommittee? One. And two, request that the advocate go ahead and develop a framework and take into account. Now, that's where we are. So I don't know if you'd like to get the responses first before you come in. Or do you want to come in now with a contribution?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies for being late. Yes, I've missed the first part. I don't think I can contribute at this stage. I think it'd be good for Advocate Fanamava to continue, and then I can, you know, ventilate, or when she ventilates her ideas, I can try and assess and see where I can contribute, and with regards to Honourable MacPherson, see, you know, what will be the adequate process to go ahead with. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Alberts. Yes, Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think what I would like to do is, I would like to show members something that might start assuaging some fears. Some time ago, I think it's, a very long time ago, I put up, sorry, I thought it's up on the screen, it's not up on the screen. let me just see how to get that off the screen. I'm going to do something here. There we go. A little bit of a technical, it's a new updated program, so it makes it a bit difficult. Okay. So this is a document that I presented some time ago to this committee. And the idea with the document at that stage was to try and get members' minds to focus, because we've been getting so much information. I felt information overload personally. That might just be me. I'm not saying members were also having information overload. But for me to distill from that amount of information into legislation became very overwhelming. So I did this document, which I hoped could help us identify what is the information that we need in order to populate. Because a lot of the information that the committee has been receiving addresses the whole of the Credit Act. There is a review of the Credit Act, of the National Credit Act, required. In fact, there is something underway. I think, in fact, that there's already some draft legislation that trade and industry is working on that reviews the whole of the Credit Act. I don't know how far that process is, but there definitely is a review of the Credit Act. So some of the information that we're receiving speaks to, like the chair was saying, the intention with this committee was to ring fence. But some of the information received speaks to the rest of the Credit Act. Issues of reckless lending, illegal lending, unlawful transactions rather. So looking at the permission that was given, or sought rather, and then given by the House, I started this document, and the intention was, like I say, to start seeing where we will have to go. And taking into account, and that is why I think it is very important to consider the principles that I presented on yesterday, because the legal principles, and especially the fact that we will need a law of general application, dictates a lot of the content of our bill. Regardless of who we target, regardless of what our measure is, there is going to be certain things that we will have to comply with in our act. And I think some of the questions asked during the previous session will already now be answered. If I quickly show you, if I go through this document, first off, it will not be a standalone bill. We will be amending the National Credit Act. So the bill that this committee is doing, the permission sought, was to amend the National Credit Act. So first off, we can perhaps dispense with the problem of debt relief versus debt forgiveness, because that is the concept behind it. Perhaps it might be good for the committee to choose a name, because the media tends to give their own nickname for legislation. And it's if you want to be known as Bruiser, then you need to say I'm Bruiser, because otherwise you might be called, Nini or something like that. So yes, we might decide we want to call it debt relief or debt forgiveness. But the point is, that will not be the name of the bill. The bill will be called the National Credit Amendment Bill, because it is absolutely necessary to amend the National Credit Act if we want to bring this measure into play. So it will definitely be an amendment act. We will have to look at definitions. What I currently have, and that comes from the subcommittee discussions, is that we were looking at indigent, and part of that would be childhood households. So that is there. Then there are things that we will have to look at. The second clause is amending Section 26, or proposing the amendment to Section 26, because it looks at the tribunal. So yes, absolutely, Honourable McPherson. If the tribunal is going to do this, we need to amend what they can and can't do. I'm actually also concerned about their orders, but I might have to, maybe while I'm on the topic, I will need permission from the committee to speak with the tribunal and the regulator, perhaps be able to phone them and just ask certain questions directly. So definitely there's going to be a lot of different things being amended, but I want to go to the main thing where we will be putting in. There I've used the word debt relief, but we can, and that is maybe where we must make a decision what we call it. The studies that I've looked at uses the words debt relief, debt forgiveness interchangeably. Debt forgiveness does not necessarily mean extinguishing a debt. It simply means debt relief. Some people are talking about sequestration being debt relief and debt forgiveness. Some other places talk about, sequestration as being debt forgiveness. And other countries talk about it as debt relief. So it seems that it's a very interchangeable thing, and it's more up maybe in our minds that it has a certain meaning. But certainly, if we want to give it a certain meaning and we want to define it, then we can do so. It is this committee's bill, after all. If the committee feels this is not clear, then we do so. So I want to specifically go to the insertion. And it doesn't have to be inserted here. And as you can see, again, I called it debt relief. Because in my mind, relief is a bit more broader than forgiving. But so, and I'm going... currently I'm providing for two types of debt relief. And again, that comes from the discussions from in the committee itself as well as in the subcommittee, where there will be an immediate debt relief or a once-off debt relief, a measure that will immediately upon this act becoming operational apply. But then also the acknowledgement that there may be a need for other measures in future, and that could be prescribed by the minister. So here would be the first thing we would say there will be an application to the regulator in a prescribed manner and form to if that consumer is, and then we give certain requirements. Now currently, as you will see here, I have a date in there about the debt. I talk about indigent, which is defined previously. And then I've got gaps there. There are other things that we can look at. And I've got a little note at the bottom that says, should we look at maximum assets? Should we look at salary? And this is the kind of document that I propose to flesh out a bit more, because we've learned more since I've last drafted this document, so that it looks a little bit more like a bill. I'm hoping to have less boxes for notes, but there will have to be boxes because I do not have all the answers yet. But this, for instance, this is the kind of... I don't know if it's big enough there.
Oh, here we are.
Yeah. So this is the kind of thing that I will do. I will go through all the presentations that we have received so far, specifically from Treasury, from Justice, looking at committee meetings, things that have been discussed, things that to me appear to be the direction that we're going in, and that is what I'll flesh out here. There will probably, after some of the Treasury presentations, be a bracket for salary. I think we can already start including that. Some of the things that I have in here won't even make sense at this point in time because information has changed. But you will see that talks about other legislation, so we'll definitely make provision to that we are in line with it. But in here, for instance, this I got from the municipalities when someone proves that they are indigent. And what is required for that is some form of proof that the consumer cannot afford to pay. And what the municipalities use is a UIF card, bank statement, proof of income, or a letter from an employer confirming salary or wages. We can even insert something here, some kind of statement that could be made to an official ag trade and industry, because we are looking at people with informal income. You know, so there are ways and means of dealing with this. I will not have all the answers. The bill that I will be presenting won't be one that can be published immediately. Yeah, that framework will definitely be just that. But, because I'm not going to go further now because I'm not presenting this document right now. But what I wanted to show with that is that the document that I'm presenting is not going to be something that will be cast in stone to such an extent that it will be difficult. Honourable McPherson does have a point. One of the rules or practical rules of drafting legislation is that if your client suggests something that is really impractical or unconstitutional, you do not draft that. Because once your client sees it, they want it. So you draft constitutionally, you draft practically, and then you require instructions to tell you, no, I don't want this. So yes, it is, and the reason for that is because it's very difficult to change it once it looks in a certain way. But I then also have to say that I'm actually currently busy with a bill where I'm on draft 2, and my instructions now is to change half of that bill, remove half of it. Because after considering the content, the person who is introducing feels that part of that bill might be too contentious. So we are simply removing it. It is not a big problem. I have for on another bill by the fourth draft, I jokingly said each was a new instruction because each draft pointed out flaws in the concept that was then fixed in the next draft. And then that draft showed a different kind of dynamics that didn't work either, and then it resulted in the third draft. But that is why it is nice to have a framework before, a document before members that you can interrogate and pull apart and say, no, but this can't work. How will this work? If we have this, can the regulator tell us, will they be able to do this? And if they can't do this, then we look at, okay, now we know they can't do this, how do we do it? So yes, although it is a risk that you run into a certain mindset when you have the document in front of you, I do believe that there's sufficient different views around the table that I don't think that risk is not something that is not manageable. So just on that, I think most of the answers are most of the questions are answered. But just to go back, Honourable Williams, yes, definitely. I think it's actually very important that we include in our framework and in our bill, almost up until the end, some little note or something to say, this is law of general application, law of general application, so that we do not lose focus of that. So almost when we go for printing, do we take it out? So that we know, yes, we tick this box. That is definitely there. I've spoken about the definitions. We can definitely put something in. And like I say, we need to perhaps just choose a name that members feel comfortable with. I mean, in respect of the definitions. So for that.
We are giving it a name, fast.
wait a minute. Let's just hear the completion of the statement. Yes, but, you know, things get so serious, you need a bit of life relief sometimes. Just complete.
Well, Mrs. Phupps, you know, with all due respect, in America, it would have been called the Phupps Bill. So the last point is just, I think I've already answered to a great extent the Honourable McPherson's question to me, who are we speaking to? Are we looking at illegal debt? Are we looking at minors? And I think my answer to that is simply that I'm going to make it so that where we look at categories, where we look at measures, where we look at certain things, that there are options for this committee to consider. So I'll look at the presentation to date, get my information from there, put it all in, and then this committee can say, no, this category must come out, this category must come in. So there will be enough opportunity. Maybe I just, if Ms. Fudd, if you would allow me, I just want to also speak about the development of a bill in general, just a committee bill. Because, you know, we are so used to the process coming from the executive, that we feel obliged to follow the exact same process. And with a committee bill, if I can give some examples, most of the committee bills that have recently been passed started, the first discussion in committees were in fact with the draft in front of members. Now, fine, it was perhaps because it was a small one paragraph that was being amended, and it was clear what had to be done about that paragraph. But it did not mean that the committee could not extend or amend or add to it or so on. And where the executive has the time and the luxury to deal with policy, and perhaps luxury is not the right word because there are a lot of requirements and a lot of boxes that they need to tick, to go through a process of consultation and then develop a policy, and then that is approved and it's presented to multiple departments and cabinet approves it, and then it comes back and then there's a bill that's being developed. That is not the kind of luxury that the parliament has when developing legislation. We almost have a policy hanging in our heads, and it comes then out to in legislation. And it's in that bill that all of this happens. The policy is developed in that bill, all of these other things, the consultation and so on. So, in fact, what this committee has done so far is already a lot more than normally happens on committee bills, because we've already had consultations, we've gathered a lot of information, we've asked questions, and that is normally something actually that happens much later. So so I think that in the process itself, this committee is fine at this point in time, procedurally, constitutionally, to especially since we are affecting a constitutional right and are subject to certain requirements, that we have a bill that speaks to those requirements and perhaps provide options that can then be discussed with these options in front of people, so that we're not talking to this vacuum, you know, where we're developing this policy in our heads, we actually have something in front of us and we can say, no, but this is not the policy that I have in my head. And then we can change and it becomes visible and perhaps can actually stimulate debate much better.
Very much, Advocate Bellanova. Allow me just to come across to the members, particularly yourself, Honourable Albert, as you've just come in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you to Advocate Fanamava. I'm a little bit disappointed because I thought she would be coming with all the answers today, which will save us a lot of time. but I know when you study law, you think you will come up with all the answers, but you come up with more questions. Thank you very much for your presentation. I'm glad to hear that the framework that you've given is not written in stone, because obviously there will be more information coming to us from Treasury and from elsewhere that will assist us to inform who are we talking about in terms of helping people. I think what is important to consider, Madam Chair, and I've mentioned this before, and when we consider helping people, and there's no problem in helping people that are in dire straits, we need to consider the economy as a whole. And the economy as a whole cannot be harmed by something that we introduce unilaterally on one side, but on the other hand, given our poor growth that we have at the moment and various other challenges that we have, and we can talk about that at length, I think we need to also invite all the role players in the credit world and tangentially connected to the credit world to help us to kickstart the economy again. Now, government must also play its role in that regard. So we cannot only say, yes, it must be the private sector and the banks and those people. They play a role together with government. And for instance, one of my ideas that I have, which is not something we write into the bill, but it might become policy, is that we ask the banks to look at banking cooperatives. There are not many banking cooperatives that are successful in South Africa. So while we try to be very surgically precise in trying to help whoever we decide to help, depending on the information that we get, that we also ensure that there are other measures in place that grow the economy. Because if we keep on pardoning debt without growing the cake, everybody will end up poor in the end of the day. So we need to look at the growth part as much as the helping part. So equity, yes, plays a role. I absolutely agree with that. But there must also be the harsh facts that we must look at in growing our economy. And trading industry plays a very big role in that regard. So we must look at policy and get the minister on board as well. Just the last thing on the bill specifically, I think that we do need to get more information from the submissions, as I understand, planned by Treasury, and who else is going to make submissions to help us pinpoint who do we really help and what would be the effect thereof on the economy, and how can we mitigate, if there's a negative fallout, how can we mitigate that by other measures as well? Thank you very much.
Yes, I'm also just, thank you very much, Honourable Albert. You will recall the terms of reference which were given to Treasury, Catherine Gibson, on the 2nd of August 2017. It also did raise a couple of issues that we should be taken to account or be cautious of.
In particular, she referred to the permanent extinguishing of identified categories of unsecured debt for South Africans caught in a debt trap. That, you know, this could bring significant economic relief, much needed in a low growth, which you've just referred to here, and a recessionary environment. So yes, it could do that. However, and this comes the balance or the caution, however, it risks systemic impact and moral hazards insofar as borrowers learn, oh, I can take a loan that I can't afford, you see. Now, we've raised this several times over the years. We don't want to create that kind of environment either. It may also reduce lending into these segments in future, thereby hampering, impeding financial inclusion, which is what we're looking for. So that has, you know, I think the committee members have, I'm sure, taken those factors into account. But what we're doing at the moment is trying to at least develop some form of framework we can begin to work with. What the Treasury research will do, and remember, we've had other research. We've had research from trade and industry when we first came back in this term. We've had numerous pieces of research from given to us and shared with us from National Credit Regulator. We've had that under the belt. But of course, you're looking at the time. We're 2017 now. We came back 2014, all right? So the research we got in 2014, 2015, you know, information, largely took us to 2013. I'm sure you all understand why. The research that came out last year, again, took us back a year. Now, that will always happen. So I think my guidance to committee members to take us forward would be, we need that research that Treasury is doing will address the broader challenges, not just what we're wanting to address. We actually made it clear we only want to deal with a very small aspect of this. We're ring-fencing this. And that trade and industry with the National Credit Regulator should deal with the more comprehensive issues in this regard. So we're not dealing with the whole problem. But some problems that have emerged in the last 7 years and really been highlighted in the last three is this issue of debt, which has overtaken many vulnerable people. People who had no intention of getting into this kind of debt trap found themselves unemployed. Then what do you do? So we said in that subcommittee, I remember I sat in one of them, you know, if you're employed, you purchase certain things knowing you've got this budget. Suddenly, you're dead. Taxi accident. What does the family do? Or you're retrenched. And we do know there is, if you look at the Statistics South Africa report, there is a rising unemployment. That's a reality. I'm not going to stand here and politically defend that. That is a reality. For whatever the reason is, I believe we can overcome it. But it means that you've got more and more people who unwittingly have this debt problem. On the other hand, you do have the people referred to here. You do. People who say, you hear that, man, it'll be another write-off, it'll be this, it'll be that. So they do get themselves into debt. They buy things they don't actually need half the time. There will always be such people. There will always be. But we need to look at the broader situation and to say, what was our original purpose in going with this committee bill? Why did we not wait for National Ford Trade and Industry? Why not? They told us they're developing this. Well, I hope this doesn't sort of find its way on the front pages, but the issue is this. We waited long enough for the gambling bill, 10 years. Now, you know, I speak for myself personally, feared that when it came to this issue, we may wait another 10 years to get it resolved. And the issue was more urgent. So is there a way of addressing the critical issue here, but not closing the door, obviously, to other amendments in this regard? So my appeal really is, look, we need that research. That research must come. We'll have the framework. When we've got the framework, we'll have the research with us. We look at it. This is a framework draft bill. It is not a bill, a framework draft bill. From that, we will engage, and we will send out a draft bill, not a framework, a draft bill to the public, who will then still come in. We've engaged them, but they will come in again. And the idea is to try and do this in November and give people 30, 35 days or whatever. But to really have a lot of public, you know, the media coverage to say, this is coming. This is coming. Please add. And from there, utilizing their comments, some of them from the mainstream, some of them ordinary people and groups. They'll come in with X, we'll have Y, the research would have come to us in October, the end of October. We can put the two together, but we won't be here in December, and that's a good thing, because it will allow the technical side on the legal side to go ahead. And I haven't communicated this yet with Mr. Hermans, but I have learned it's not going to be possible for us to do a study visit in December. And I know some members may be worried about when that date will be. But what we would have to propose and take forward is to undertake a study visit on this in the middle of January, between the 12th to the 20th of January. You see? Then we will have this, and it is at that point it could become apparent to us, you know, people have commented on this, and they're saying this is unconstitutional, just as an example, whatever it is. We will then have got that opinion, senior counsel, and then it'll come back here. So I don't think there's any need to wait. The other issue about 3,000 and 7,000, 2,500 and then 7,500, we can recommend in this bill. You will recall some of you who were here when the late Oriani Ambrosini was here, and we took one of his clauses and we worked with that. But we said in the bill, these other two should be taken into account in the next amendment while they were waiting for Treasury to do certain things. So you do have to make a start at some point. And my appeal to members is, I agree with you, Honourable Macpherson, there is a need, seen as this is a committee bill, which all parties agreed we take to the House and say, please can we do X? And we even gave the principles. There's a need for us to have an element of consensus, at the very least, sufficient consensus. We can't say this is a committee bill and five parties go in different directions. Then that's not a committee bill. Do you hear what I'm saying? We cannot pretend it is. So I do take cognizance of that, and I hope all the members do, and that we do try and work together on this. But the proposal would be, in this framework, we would get different parties adding to the information, and it would then come in, not having been in this committee, but it'll be the DA input here, and you'd have it in blue or red or green. You'd have the Freedom Front, you'd have the EFF, you'd have the IFP. So that when it's over there, we'll discuss that issue. So the issue, and the NCT will make a decision to grant this measure, etc., etc. We may have different views. The view around not, you know, impacting negatively on the economy, and rather focusing on growing the economy in some way. This was raised in the committee before it went to Parliament, and that is savings. This is not just about getting off debt. It's about developing a culture of savings. The point you've just made here, Honourable Albert, It's also about how do we restructure the banks and open up ways to grow the economy. How? It could be something else, Honourable Macpherson, that you said you've got some ideas which you consider very important. They're not only important for you. You represent a constituency, do you understand? It's not just a Macpherson issue. It's what many may... No, I do mean that, Honourable Williams. We all represent constituencies, do we not? And I am sure that you are reflecting that position or opinion. So we need to get it here, please. So it's an appeal. And so just before we take a tea break and then take a decision after tea at 10 past 11 or 11, let's hear the last word on this from yourself, Honourable Macpherson, Honourable Williams.
Thank you. I think the one good thing that's come out of this advocate is your agreement or view that it actually has to be couched in a NCA amendment bill. And I think that's really important, because we can't do one without, you know, completely looking at a review of the NCA. And that's good, because I think that it allows us to achieve what we want to achieve, but it also allows us to deal with many outstanding issues that the NCA, also at least the NCR, should be dealing with. But what I'm concerned about is that I go back to the point of who are we speaking to, because just going through, and I know it's draft and it's just something that you worked on a long time ago, but it speaks to credit providers. Now, is a person who lends money illegally, are they a credit provider? No, they're not. So how do we speak to those sorts of instances? So I need to think about, you know, how we're going to move forward on this. I think that it's good that we can look at an entire review of the NCA to include what this committee wants to do. But again, I'm still struggling to define who am I speaking to, because I don't know, advocate, I don't know, and if I don't know, I don't know how you know. And that still remains my biggest concern, is we're doing this work for people that we don't know who they are. Because, you know, quite frankly, when we talk about debt relief, it can't just be, you know, this idea that some people have of just extinguishing debt. That is a very small component of debt relief. There are many other components of debt relief, like dealing with reckless lending, like dealing with illegal credit, the debt counseling process. And I think that what would be very helpful, advocate, is if you could also, you know, list, you know, what could be included under a definition of debt relief and what those mechanisms are. I think that would be incredibly helpful. So it actually gives us the broad scope of what debt relief is, and not this narrow, at times, fixation of, well, if you owe 10,000 Rand, you know, it's going to be gone. And just a word of, an assistance or a plea. The one thing that I don't think that we can allow to happen is an expectation or a belief that if you owe money, that you can have it get rid of. Because let me tell you something. If you thought fees must fall brought this country to a halt, wait until debt must fall becomes a movement, because everyone believes that they should have debt relief or debt extinguishing. we won't be able to leave Parliament. There will be so many people. I might even join the protest because I'd like my mortgage to disappear. So I think that that's something that I would really hope that is kept in the back of our mind, is that we don't create this expectation that debt's just going to disappear, because I think Ms. Mutsagera might just become the most unpopular person in South Africa if she has to adjudicate all of this. And I happen to like her. I think she's a great lady. So, I mean, that would just be a consideration in how we draft and terminologies that we use.
Did the ANC have its hand up at all? Honourable William?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think that what Honourable McPherson has just raised about expectations, we have raised this, in fact, in our first subcommittee, this was the biggest thing that we raised, not to raise the expectations of South Africa on this. We should really not do that, and he's absolutely right. I just want to talk about consensus. I think that there might be this impression that myself and Honourable, or the DA and the ANC, are not on the same page here, and that is incorrect. I think we're very much on the same page. I think that where we have differences is the process, and I think that there shouldn't be this perception out there that the DA are going in one way and the ANC is going in another way. I think we're both going in the same direction. It's just the process, and if I will withdraw that statement I made earlier about stalling the mechanism, because it's fine. Thank you, Jim.
Marvellous. It's like when the Constitution was crafted, you know, poles apart, then finding the same path. Any moment, yes. But look, what we need is just one moment here. Because we just need to prepare something to get on to that final position, can we have a 5-minute tea break, please? The tea is out there. And if you could return by 11, then we could take that decision. All right? Honourable Chair, coming to you.
Just call them first, just let me first call them. Because otherwise you're going to change it and change it again. Yeah.
I really apologize, but I was also on the hunt, as it were. We have been fortunate again in obtaining the services and the support of the Chair of Ethics, the Honourable Amos Musondo. There are just two decisions for us to take. The first decision concerns the committee bill, clearly known as the National Credit Amendment to the National Credit Bill. Is that it? Amendment Bill. Otherwise known as the committee bill. We, after being presented with the framework yesterday, deliberating on it today, having taken into consideration the work of the subcommittee, and the decision to ring-fence the issue in question, I propose that we instruct Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe
to prepare a framework of a draft bill which will include what I have just said, plus members of this committee taking forward, or rather communicating directly with the advocate as the drafter of our bill, any issues and ideas they believe should be incorporated. And those will be reflected in different colours, as has been our normal practice, to indicate it's from ANC, Freedom Front, DA, EFF, IFP, and so on. Please communicate directly with the advocate, who will give you her email, is that correct, Advocate van der Merwe? And also, it'll go through Mr. Hermans, but I want you to know that you can communicate directly, especially as this is during the constituency period. So that is what I'm proposing in respect of this bill, and that she brings back to the committee on the 2nd or 3rd of October, the 21st of September. You've said the submissions should all be in, anything you wish to add at the moment, and you return that framework draft bill to us in the first week of October. Can I please have somebody to move that, Honourable MacPherson?
Some clarity, please. I think there's a difference between a framework as a draft bill, or the framework to lead to a draft bill. So I'm happy to agree to providing my submissions, and I'm sure along with other political parties, to a document that will then inform the drafting of a draft bill. So if I understand it like that, and that when the advocate then comes back to us, it's not a draft bill with, you know, the DA's point is inserted here, the ANC's point is inserted there. It's a framework that will lead to the drafting of a draft bill. Is that how I understand it?
Not exactly. The framework will have the format of a bill. That's the way it has always been done, the format. But if you believe the points that are going to be added to outside should not form part of that, and that they should simply be put at the end, it's just that if you're going to have proposals on a definition, where else should you put them but at a particular point, you see? But if different parties and members are not sure where it should be, I think that what we're saying is that this, in the nature of a draft, the legal person, the advocate, can position it. But positioning it doesn't mean it's cast in concrete there at all. It is simply that kind of idea. Are there any other comments before we take this forward? Can I hear from someone else? I will come back to you, Honourable MacPherson. Yes, Honourable Albert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe this will provide some clarity or answer. I understand that the work that's given to us is in the form of a draft bill, but we can make amendments in it, and we can make amendments that's quite drastic. So we can redesign it as such, include whatever we want to include, take out whatever we want to take out. So in that sense, it is a framework of a bill, but not the bill itself. And I think that's perhaps the clarity that Honourable MacPherson was trying to get to. He can explain himself if that's the idea that he had in mind. But I think, once again, we know it's not cast in stone. We can redesign within the framework that's given to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Albert. Honourable Williams, and to conclude, we'll have the Honourable MacPherson. Honourable Williams.
Chipperson, thank you. Chipperson, I second your proposal. We think that's the way forward. Thank you.
Honourable William, MacPherson.
Thanks, Chair. So I think that Honourable Alberts was alluding to my point. And on that basis, I'm comfortable then to submit my thoughts to the advocate. Just a question of clarity, a further question of clarity. When we get the research from the National Treasury, will that then further be fed into the process of the draft framework? Because I think when we get that, that's going to substantially change, you know, how we view things. So is there going to be further opportunities to feed into that?
Yes, Honourable MacPherson, once we've got the framework back with those additions from members, we will have it back in the first week of October. In another minute, we're going to pass the program, and you'll see from the program how much time has been allocated to those deliberations. But I want to thank committee members for really applying their minds. They have. And I really want to thank you for taking the process forward. So we had a seconder, but it was in fact a seconder of my proposal. Do you second that on the basis of your understanding, Honourable MacPherson?
I'm happy to do that on those clarities.
Thank you very much. And then, members, there's just, I think you've all got the program. Now, here it is, the program, and we're simply asking you to study it. It is the draft program to take account of the bill as well. So can we have someone to formally propose the adoption of this committee program? Honourable Williams, seconded by the Honourable right. Members, I'd like to thank the Honourable Amos Masondo, who has popped in twice to try and assist us, the Chairperson of Ethics, and also the Honourable Mandisa Mashoba, who, if I'm not mistaken, you came from the Constitutional... Justice. Communications. It looked so impressive, you see. I thought it was justice. My apologies. Thank you for being with us and facilitating this process. Thank you, both of you. Members, this adjourns this committee meeting until tomorrow morning. At what time? 8:30, so that we can try and complete this at 12:30. One. You will be happy to learn that won't require a decision.
Could you say that?
No, because you asked me to ascertain whether we could insist that members of Transnet should not pay for their own travel. Do you remember someone raising that issue? And I pointed out I did not think we would have that authority, and we don't. But I understand the sentiment and what informed that. For state-owned companies to behave in the manner in which they behaved, who walk in here and expect Parliament to change its program, is not acceptable. Worse still is to come unprepared. Very poor. So people must respect the institution of Parliament. So thank you for those members who agreed to that position. I'm sorry we can't insist on it. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.